This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Minnesota finally gets two senators and the Democrats get 60. The New York State Senate stalemate staggers on and so many scandals, so little time. It's Wednesday and time for another whirlwind edition of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to discuss political discourse. Mark Sanford bears even more in South Carolina. A former John Edwards aide signs a book deal to tell all next fall. Monica Conyers admits she took a bribe and resigns from the Detroit City Council. A bit later, do President Obama and other politicians trail public opinion on gay issues? But first, the political junkie, Ken Rudin, joins us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil. What a shame we don't have much to talk about this week.
Oh, it's just another boring week in politics.
It's awful.
But we begin with a trivia question.
We do, and we begin with a Mark Sanford-related trivia question. There's more pressure on him to resign, and of course, we'll talk about that later in the show. I was hoping to come up with a trivia question about Republican governors who resigned their office because of a sex scandal. I could not find that. So, a little simpler question. The last Republican governor to resign because of scandal.
Because of a scandal, any kind of a scandal.
Any scandal.
The last Republican governor to resign because of a scandal. If you think you know the answer, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. But in the meantime, hey, finally, there's a senator, two senators from Minnesota.
It only took 238 days since the election, but yesterday the Minnesota Supreme Court ruled unanimously, 5-0, that Norm Coleman's appeal of his apparent defeat to Al Franken was ruled out. They said that Al Franken will be the next senator. Last night, about 7:15 local time, Governor Tim Pawlenty, Republican, certified the election of Al Franken, and next week he will be sworn in Washington to be the 60th Democratic senator, including the two independents.
And that's as a result of the fact that Norm Coleman, who could have tried to take this case to federal court and given everybody even more agita, decided in the end that it wasn't worth it.
We have reached the point where further litigation damages the unity of our state, which is also fundamental. In these tough times, we all need to focus on the future, and the future today is that we have a new United States senator. I congratulate Al Franken and his victory in this election.
And he, of course, touted now as a possible candidate for the governorship in his state.
Well, that could be the future that Norm Coleman was talking about. Of course, Norm Coleman ran for governor once before in 1998, lost to Jesse Ventura. So he first lost to a wrestler, now he lost to a comedian, Al Franken. In between, he did win a Senate seat for one term. It's something that a lot of people in Minnesota was rolling their eyes saying, enough is enough. And there were a lot of Republicans who wanted it to go on even further, perhaps a U.S. Supreme Court appeal. But once Coleman conceded yesterday afternoon, that was the end of it.
And you mentioned the 60-vote Democratic majority. In theory, good news that Senator Robert Byrd was released from the hospital yesterday, but neither he nor Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts very often in the United States Senate.
That's correct. They've both been very ill. The prognosis for Kennedy has not been good, and we don't know what's going on with Robert Byrd, although he is home resting fine, and he's suffering from a staph infection. He was in the hospital for 6 weeks. But then again, you have the ideological impurity, shall we say, of people like Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Joe Lieberman, certainly on foreign policy issues, Max Baucus on health care may not agree with the Obama administration, Evan Bayh on tax issues. The point is, there are a lot of them. To get them all voting, it's one thing to have 60 Democrats, to get them all voting on the same page is another problem, and that's going to be kind of difficult.
And we'll get to see that, I guess, on the energy and carbon trading bill that's going to be on the Senate floor first thing. And Sotomayor might be an easier thing. Anyway, moving right along, we thought Governor Sanford of South Carolina had said everything at his news conference just a week ago. Well, it turned out he's still talking, Ken.
Well, I mean, we know about the Michael Jackson's death. We learned that from TMZ. Well, there's also something something called TMI, and Mark Sanford gave much too much TMI to the Associated Press interview, talking about his relationship with this woman from Argentina, that she was his soulmate. When he kept saying soulmate over and over again, I thought she was from South Korea. But okay, thank you. So it was just, much too much information about how many times he's seen her, and then of course he's had other affairs of the heart, although it didn't
stop short of the
sex
line.
Of the sex line, yeah. And so poor Jenny Sanford, and poor all of us. And you know, I think I expressed, I mean, last week's show, the scandal broke as we were in the middle of the show. It was a remarkable scene here at Studio 3A. But the sympathy that a lot of people felt for Mark Sanford, I think, dissipated over the week, and of course, directed more toward Jenny Sanford. But the fact is, there's a lot of now pressure on him to resign as governor of South Carolina. The problem is that there's a lieutenant governor there by the name of Andre Bauer, who most Republicans don't like either. So, of course, if Mark Sanford quits, Bauer becomes governor, and then all these other Republicans who are hoping to run for governor in 2010.
Including the attorney general, who's hoping to investigate the governor.
McMaster, exactly. And, of course, they would take a back seat because Bauer would suddenly become the incumbent. And now there's a whole bunch of rumors about Bauer and his past and all that. So it gets very lovely in the state, in the Palmetto State.
In the Palmetto State. Anyway, we have some people who think they know the answer to our trivia question, 800-989-8255. If you think you know the identity of the last Republican governor to resign in a scandal. And let's see if we can go first to, this is Dean. And Dean's with us from Cleveland.
Was it George Ryan of Illinois?
George Ryan of Illinois, who is still in prison, never resigned his seat early. He filled out his 8 years as governor. I believe 8 years. I made it 4 years. But George Ryan filled out his seat, never resigned early. So he's in prison now, but was not forced to give up his governorship.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much. And here's an email. Elliot Spitzer of New York.
Well, Elliot Spitzer did leave because of a scandal, and it was a sex scandal, but Elliot Spitzer, of course, is a Democrat. We're looking for the last Republican governor to resign because of scandal.
Jay's on the line from Cape Cod.
Hey, how are you today?
Very well, thanks.
Is it John Rowland?
John Rowland is the correct answer.
Okay.
John Rowland is the governor, was the governor of Connecticut, and he resigned in July 2004 because of corruption charges.
And so hang on the line, Jay, and you will...
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Do I wait? If I get the answer right, do I get a T-shirt?
Yeah. Is Al Franken the first Democrat elected to the Senate in an election he defeated two former or current senators?
That's a good one, because he did defeat Norm Coleman, who had been senator, and Dean Barkley, who was briefly senator after Paul Wellstone died. Jesse Ventura appointed him. So that's I think that may be a correct answer.
What about D'Amato as a Republican? Wouldn't he have also been in there?
Well, D'Amato did defeat Jacob Javits, but I don't know if
Charles Goodell.
No, Charles Goodell was beaten. No, Charles Goodell actually was beaten by Jim Buckley.
That's right. Okay.
Okay.
So I do get the T-shirt.
Well, Jay, you still get a T-shirt, even though you were wrong on the Jay Buckley.
I didn't say I was wrong. I asked.
Okay. All right. Hang on. Of course, a fabulous no prize T-shirt will be going to Jay in
and
Cape Cod.
And Ken.
Ken already took one. I should note that. Anyway, interesting challenge that we heard about today. The Carolyn Maloney, the congresswoman from New York, deciding that she is not going to step aside and allow
Gillibrand
to ride unopposed to the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate from New York.
Maybe. The report is that in 2 weeks, I guess it'll be, that she will, Carolyn Maloney, who represents the Upper East Side in Manhattan, will announce her candidacy for the Senate. Joe Biden apparently called her and said, please don't do it. The White House is solidly behind Gillibrand. We want a united Democratic Party.
What do you think the Rahm Emanuel call was like?
Well, I think words that we cannot use on this program. But in the end, I'm still not convinced Maloney runs. But right now, according to, at least as of now, she is planning to run with an announcement in 2 weeks.
And yet another scandal, this involving the wife of Michigan Congressman John Conyers, his wife Monica Conyers, a member of the council on in Detroit City Council, accepted a plea deal last week and this week has resigned.
It's another Monica scandal, although not the kind of Monica scandal we're known
for. Not involving a blue dress.
No, and she was not only a member of the Detroit City Council, she was the City Council President pro tem, the wife, of course, of John Conyers, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. She took, I think, a $6,000 bribe to influence her vote on a sludge deal, which is kind of sleazy. But anyway, she announced her resignation effective July 6th, so she's out.
Speaking of sleazy, an aide to former Senator John Edwards and Democratic candidate John Edwards announced earlier this week that he's taking a book deal, a tell-all book deal, in which apparently he's going to say, among other things, that the senator prevailed upon him to say that he was the father of that baby.
Rielle Hunter, that's the girlfriend. This is, you know, I guess the Democrats don't feel that the Republicans deserve all the bad reporting from sex scandals. Andrew Young, who was, of course, not the civil rights leader, but the former aide to John Edwards, who said he took the fall for Rielle Edwards' baby because John Edwards pressured him to do it. It's really John Edwards' baby, which, of course, John Edwards denies.
Still denies.
And, of course, when Elizabeth Edwards was asked about that, she says, I don't know. Who knows? But it's a tell-all thing. And apparently he found a sex tape that has John Edwards and Rielle Hunter. Here's what the Daily News called it. It said that showing him taking positions that weren't in his official platform. So that's the kind of a tape that's there.
And finally, a bipartisan scandal, and that, of course, is the situation in Albany, New York. 31 senators on each side, the state budget and other important items all remain to be voted on, and yet they are both screaming at each other like sixth graders.
It is. Of course, you've just insulted sixth graders, and we should apologize to sixth graders. But there's also a report out that because of demographic changes in New York, because of shrinking population in upstate New York and growing population in downstate in New York City, the Democrats are almost certain to recapture for good control of the state Senate in the 2010 elections and probably hold it until forever.
And the Republicans, of course, are trying to desperately hold on to whatever claim to the majority they have to modify the rules that would allow both sides to be able to participate and that sort of thing. Of course, it's been pointed out rules they chose not to modify when they were in control forever.
Exactly. I think that the exact term is lots of luck.
Up next, the honeymoon is over for President Obama among many gay activists who argue that he has not lived up to his campaign promises. Do politicians reflect public attitudes on gay rights? We'll talk more with political junkie Ken Rudin in just a moment. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Political Junkie Day. Ken Rudin is with us, NPR's political editor. His blog and his latest podcast are both online at npr.org/junkie. And we want to focus the rest of our conversation on the politics of gay rights and the growing frustration among many gay activists. President Obama, they argue, never delivered on campaign promises. Don't ask, don't tell still stands. So does the Defense of Marriage Act. For his part, President Obama said, we have made progress, and he promised there will be more. He reached out to activists in the gay community at a White House reception earlier this week.
For even as we face extraordinary challenges as a nation, we cannot and will not put aside issues of basic equality. We seek an America in which no one feels the pain of discrimination based on who you are or who you love.
President Obama speaking with gay leaders at a White House reception earlier this week. Still, many argue that politicians from both parties are out of touch with public opinion on gay rights. What do you see where you live? Do your politicians reflect public opinion on gay issues? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can always get into the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And joining us here in Studio 3A is Aubrey Sarvis. He heads up a nonprofit advocacy organization, Service Members Legal Defense Network. They provide legal services to military members affected by Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Nice of you to be with us today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And you were invited to the White House reception, and you went.
I was, and I went with one of our clients, Lieutenant Colonel Victor Fehrenbach, who's an 18-year aviator flying the F-15 for the Air Force, and unfortunately also under investigation for Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
And I understand you had the opportunity to introduce him to President Obama.
I did, and the president seemed to know who the colonel was, and spoke to him very directly, said that he understood his situation and that we were going to get Don't Ask, Don't Tell done.
Yet not probably soon enough for the lieutenant colonel.
It may not be. He has had one board hearing. He's facing another one. And without action in the next few months, unfortunately, this aviator may be another casualty of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
As you know, there are many in the gay community who say the honeymoon is over. President Obama has had time. This could be an executive order. He does not need to wait for Congress. Why has he waited?
Well, I think the president has been waiting in part to bring the senior military leadership along with him, and I think that's very important. Frankly, we at SLDM were very frustrated earlier this year. A lot of anxiety. There was a lot of silence at the White House on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And a few months ago, approximately 2 months ago, we published a open letter to the president in Roll Call, a newspaper here on Capitol Hill, and pleading for him to end his silence and to act and lead on Don't Ask, Don't Tell in getting this statute repealed.
And what he said at the reception in his speech was that this was unacceptable and it would be changed, but he didn't say when.
He did not say when. And however, I was encouraged the way in which the president addressed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He did speak to specifics. He did refer to work he was doing on Capitol Hill with senators and with congressmen. And he talked about bringing along the senior leadership over at DOD. And frankly, yesterday we saw some evidence of that. Secretary Gates indicated that indeed he was looking at ways to minimize the number of discharges under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He was looking, he said, with his general counsel to see what flexibility the department had in stopping Don't Ask, Don't Tell investigations.
I think you probably know that there are some in the gay community who regard this as still way too slow, and that those who went to this reception were regarded as sellouts by some on the blocks.
Well, I certainly don't regard Lieutenant Colonel Victor Fehrenbach as a sellout, nor do I believe that tag applies to SLDN. We were there to look the president in the eye and make our case, and I think the colonel did that. He did it effectively. And I'd like to believe it had an impact upon the president. I think it's important to be there and look the president in the eye.
Some gay leaders have already skipped political fundraisers for Democrats, one hosted by Vice President Biden. If there's continued inactivity, shall we say, is this a live option? Where do gay activists go? There's certainly...
Well, I think all of us have the option of staying at home on Election Day. We have the option of not getting out our checkbooks, not getting out our credit cards. And I think that will be exercised if the need is there. Frankly, there's something the president can do now, and do it with the Congress. We have proposed and will be submitting to the Congress and to the White House legislative language whereby the Congress would direct the Secretary of Defense to suspend all Don't Ask, Don't Tell investigations. Do that for the remainder of this Congress while Congress considers repealing the statute. The statute is the underlying problem. If Congress sends out language to the president can sign it.
And do you have any sympathy with those in the White House or those in Congress who are reluctant to get out in front on this issue?
None whatsoever. They should be acting with a sense of urgency. Every day, almost two service members are discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Since January 20th, since this president was sworn in, 275 service members will have been discharged. That is unacceptable. We need Congress to act with a sense of urgency. Let's be clear here. Congress enacted Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Congress owns it. It's their law. But yes, we need presidential leadership, and we need a partnership between Congress and the president acting together.
Ken?
Aubrey, the Congress also in 1996 passed the Defense of Marriage Act, and it wasn't even a close vote. It was 85-14 in the Senate. It was 342-67 in the House. This is, of course, defines marriage as between a man and a woman. Congress also owns that as well. That doesn't look like that's going away anytime soon.
Well, I don't have an assessment on the vote count on that, and I'm not sure what is scheduled with respect to activity on the floor or the House or the Senate. So I'm not clear on that.
Okay. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Aubrey Sarvis is Executive Director of the Service Members Legal Defense Network, and he was kind enough to join us here today in Studio 3A. Tammy's on the line. Tammy calling from Chicago.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, please.
I was just asked what was going on politically here in Chicago, maybe on this issue. I know that downstate, the state legislature just put a gay marriage bill on the back burner, trying to concentrate on what's going on with the economy and the state budget here in Chicago. I know that the city gives benefits to same-sex couples, but I don't think that anyone is, as you just stated, in a hurry to get in line to support gay marriage. I think that, you know, there's still a lot of trying to figure out whether marriage is a religious label or just a secular label. And I think that's something that the powers that be want to establish. Because
and do you regard this as an honest intellectual inquiry, or do you think this is people sticking their finger in the wind and wondering how their people are going to vote at the next election?
You know, I in all honesty, I really think it's people trying to really vote their conscience. You know, I think that people are hung up on the word marriage. And like I said, I think the definition of marriage needs to be kind of agreed on, because if you say that, you know, marriage is a religious thing, and, you know, and all of the religions say, okay, well, that's not cool. So then can we just, I think everybody would be really happy if they could just take the marriage tag off of it and call it, like, you know, I'm sorry, my mind just threw a blank.
Civil union, I think, is what you're looking for. But
exactly. So, but, you know, if you can I think a lot of the politicians would prefer that you call it anything but marriage, and, you know, we'll try to push it through. But, you know, I mean, I think that if it was a blind vote, I think if it was a blind vote, that people would just, you know, live and let live.
Tammy, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
You too. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. And joining us now is a politician who has publicly struggled with this issue, the mayor of San Diego, Jerry Sanders, a Republican. Nice to have you with us on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you very much, Neil.
And when you were running for mayor, you opposed gay marriage, though supported civil unions, and then changed your mind very publicly at a news conference a few years ago.
Well, I did. My daughter is gay. She's a lesbian, and we had many conversations about this, and when it came time for the San Diego City Council to file an amicus brief on behalf of the gay community on the gay marriage issue, the issue became very public, and it was one that I finally decided that I needed to come out on, and I needed to give my feelings on, and I did that, knowing that that was not going to be popular in the Republican Party, but also knowing that I really felt strongly that my family is much more important than any ideology.
Were you swayed by your daughter?
Absolutely. But, you know, I think that, you know, absolutely learning about this, learning that, you know, the last caller talked about people would like to call it something different. But you know what? This is really the last group that for some reason people feel like they can discriminate against, that they don't get their same constitutional protections as everybody else. And it became very clear in California where my daughter said, you know, I woke up this morning and found out that I can't get married, but my sister can. And, you know, I'm not sure why anyone else should be able to determine who should marry who and under what circumstances. So it's been an issue that I think has been at the forefront of at least my thoughts and also my family's thoughts.
And as you and other politicians look at it, do you think that politicians look at it with as an issue of conscience, or do you think they look at it as an issue that, well, could decide how they do in the next party primary?
Well, you know, I suppose, and first of all, I'm in a nonpartisan office, so there's not a party primary. But I think all of us are concerned about that, and it used to be more of a lightning rod issue, but after I took my very public position, I ran for re-election, and I won in the primary against four other candidates. So, you know, I think that that should tell people that the thought processes are changing on those, and that we're really looking at a human rights issue, one where everybody deserves to have the same opportunity to pursue happiness, the same opportunity to marry, the same opportunity to be with the person that they love.
And in that election, was did this become an issue? Did your opponents raise it?
No, it didn't become an issue. And you know, I think that's I think in California, even though we saw you know, a vote against it, it's changed very dramatically in the percentages that have come up in the last several years, and I think that that's showing a lot of progress by voters in California, and that was not an issue during the election at all.
We're talking with Jerry Sanders, the mayor of San Diego. Of course, Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is with us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Phil calling from Cincinnati.
How you doing, Neil?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm just calling. I actually work for a city council candidate here in Cincinnati, and Cincinnati is a historically a very conservative area. And you know, as we're my candidate is very in touch with the gay community, you know, supported heavily by the gay community. And it's interesting because as much as you see Obama, you know, not acting on a lot of the gay rights issues, which are so important because they're civil rights issues. You know, a lot of the gay community here, I think, is overall pretty accepting of it. I know personally, I'm a straight male, and I am considering, you know, Obama's already, you know, he's already tackled climate change, the stimulus, the economic meltdown. I mean, there's so many things on his plate right now. You know, it's something that I know he is going to tackle down the line. But I think people, especially the gay community as well, has a fair amount of patience for this issue.
You think they do have a fair amount of patience?
I do, and you know, it's understandable that people are upset that he hasn't tackled it sooner, especially because it's a civil right issue, it affects so many people. But at the same time, I feel, and I don't want to necessarily speak for the whole gay community here or anything like that, but you know, personally, I feel like he is going to get to it in time, and considering what he has on his plate right now, you know, that's understandable.
Phil, thank you very much.
Thank you, Neil.
I wonder, Mr. Mayor, if you hear other politicians saying, look, we've got budget problems, and certainly you've got those in California. We've got health care. We've got so many other things on our plate. This has to be on the back burner.
Well, I think it's easy to try to push it to the back burner, I think especially for politicians, and I certainly understand it. But I don't think that's an issue. You can't push civil rights issues back to the back burner. I just don't think that that's something that's acceptable. I don't think it's something that people feel comfortable with. And I, you know, I know the president's got a lot on his plate, and I certainly respect what he does. You know, I think that this is one of those issues that you have to come out on, and you have to be very strong about it. It's a civil rights issue, and it's not a popular one. The same as when we were dealing with a lot of other civil rights issues, people knew they weren't popular issues, and yet strong people came out on them, and I think that's what's going to be important, and I think the president holds a key for that.
Here's an email from Nathan in Oklahoma City. Despite my state's reputation as one of the most conservative in America, despite the fact we're the home of such foaming-at-the-mouth anti-gay characters such as Sally Kern and Anita Bryant, I have to say my husband and I have had almost no trouble with anti-gay sentiment. I would say that in Oklahoma, our politicians are very out of step with the populace. Most of the people I know couldn't care less about anyone's sexual orientation or whether gay marriage is legal or not. As to President Obama, while I've been disappointed so far in the slow steps the administration has taken, I think we have to remember to keep in mind that only 6 months have passed since the inauguration. Let's give the president time to get some more pressing things done. Gay people will still be here and ready to marry once we've tackled some of these more pressing issues. And Mr. Mayor, I want to thank you very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jerry Sanders is the mayor of San Diego, who running for election, opposed gay marriage, and then in the situation where he had to put his pen to paper on it as the mayor of San Diego, decided to very publicly change his mind. And as he said, he has politically survived an election since then. Ken Rudin, this is an issue that is every politician is grappling with on every level of government in the country.
It is, and it's especially interesting to hear this coming from the mayor of San Diego. It's one thing for Gavin Newsom to say something like that in San Francisco, where the political climate is certainly much different. The fact that he's coming from the culturally conservative area of San Diego, I thought it was interesting. Is the mayor gone? Have we?
Oh, I'm afraid yes. I apologize.
Okay. Because I was going to say, it was interesting also in the fact, first of all, if you don't know much about this mayor, if you go to YouTube and just search his press conference from 2007 when he switched sides on this issue, it was a very moving press conference, very emotionally moving. So I urge everybody to see it. But also, there's another Republican out there who also, a very famous Republican, who has a gay daughter. And I just thought the contrast between the way Mayor Sanders does it and the way the former vice president handled it was interesting.
Ken Rudin, our political junkie, with us every Wednesday here on Talk of the Nation. Again, you can read his blog. You do write a blog every day.
Only if something happens, and it's not been much.
So unusual. And, yeah. and connect with his podcast at npr.org. Stay with us. New warning from an FDA panel about acetaminophen, the key ingredient in Tylenol and other pain relievers. Questions and answers about acetaminophen coming up. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.